There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you?
This is Liberty Radio, your voice of truth and freedom.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Britton here with you for another Sunday night, and I hope you're all doing very, very well. And we got a special show lined up here for you tonight. As we told you, we're going to have special guest Ted Weiland on with us, and he'll be on here in just a few minutes with us. But I just want to mention right off the top, don't know how much we'll get into as far as news and everything, but we will take your phone calls if everything works okay, if we don't have any technical glitches. This is the first time I've set this up the way I've got it, so it'll be interesting to see how we pan out here with our, our different connections here. This is the first time I've ever used this method of connecting a guest, and so we'll see how this all pans out. But anyway, we will be taking your phone calls. But the one thing I wanted to comment on right off the bat, and I know I hate to burst any bubbles out there, but if you needed any more ammunition to quit putting your hopes and faith in government, particularly in the government that we have now, I don't know what more you would need. We've got stories that, and these are from reliable sources, indicating who else is really behind, for example, the alternative media purge. And we'll get into some of that as well, because I know a lot of people have been out there, you know, saying, Trump, would you, you know, at least speak out against the alternative media purge? Well, when we get done tonight, you'll see why he is not. And so, you know, we're learning more and more, and I think we're going to wind up learning a lesson in a very interesting way, that you can't put your hope and faith in politicians. And so anyway, we'll get into some of that as the show unfolds. Also been doing some more work here on the station, so hope everything is sounding good. I would be interested in the reports from those of you listening to the stream. We now have a contact link on the MO Liberty Radio website. Thank you, Charlie, for that. And I would appreciate it if some of you could contact me and say, hey, the stream sounds great. Does it sound better than it used to? Does it sound worse than it used to? We had some reports of some speakers not handling the audio that was coming right out of our audio processor, and I'm not going to belabor why we were having that issue. It's a technical issue dealing with the FM side of things, and we can get into that at another time. But anyway, without any further ado, I'm going to bring up our special guest on the broadcast. And Ted, are you there?
All right.
Hello there, Ted. So first of all, how are you? I hope things are well for you out there in Nebraska.
Well, I am blessed beyond what I deserve, that is for sure. And I'm well and pleased to be with you, Sam, on your show here.
Absolutely. We're absolutely overjoyed to have you. Absolutely. Why don't we start out by giving our listeners, those who are new to listening to your broadcast, a lot of let me first preface where we're going here with the fact that you come on just before I come on. And during the evening hours, and then during the morning hours, you come on at 9 a.m. Central Time here on MO Liberty Radio. And so for those who have been listening to your broadcast and maybe don't know, who is Ted Weiland? Give them a little bit of information, you know, a little information about yourself.
All right. Well, you know, probably the best way for me to do that, Sam, is to refer to what I claim is my passage in the Bible, and that's 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and where beginning with verse 26, it says, for you see your calling, brethren, how there are not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God chose the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and the weak things to confound the things that are strong. That's me. I've often said, if I just wish that I could carry around some kind of picture that when people see me, they'd see what who and what Ted Weiland really is. Because anything else that they see that's good, it's the Christ in me. And he took a dumb, tobacco-spitting, cussing bull rider and somehow picked him off the pavement after a horrific wreck, and beginning there brought me to the gospel, to the cross of Christ, and to his empty tomb, and somehow chose me to somehow represent him to this day. And it's been over 40 years since that point in my life when I had just got out of high school and was actually headed to my first professional rodeo, and was in a horrific car wreck in which two people were killed, but it was God's means of finally bringing me around to hear the gospel. It was actually several months later, but it was a result of that wreck that I got to hear the gospel.
Right.
Without going into the details, that's me. I'm nobody other than what God has made of me, and I praise him for all of that. I grew up in Colorado, like I said, rodeoing for the most part and hunting, and those were the gods in my life back when he touched my life, and have since moved over to western Nebraska and have a wife and four children and now three grandchildren who I, of course, love dearly, and God has blessed me so that all are faithful, and the babies are still babies, but Lord willing, they will be as well. And God has planted me here, at least at this time, to minister from western Nebraska. So that's Ted Weiland. And again, anything that someone thinks comes good from me is simply Christ.
You're right. Now, are you currently, you're not pastoring a church right now, are you? You doing specifically, are you doing any kind of radio or internet ministry? Or I know you're doing internet.
Yeah, definitely internet. We have a couple websites, but the one in particular I think we'll be talking about is BibleVersusConstitution.org, and that's Bible Versus spelled out, V-E-R-S-U-S, Constitution.org. And I'll probably mention some things from there that as we get along here, but there's that, and we do a home church at this point and minister to a lot of people that are homeschoolers and home churchers, people that have seen the fallacy of what's going on in a lot of what's called contemporary Christianity, although I think a lot of it's not even close to being what we find in the Bible. Certainly not Christendom, which it used to be here in America in the early 1600s. It was known as simply Christendom, Christians dominionizing society on behalf of their king. And regrettably, that has now devolved into what I call merely four-walled stained glass Christianity, where so tragically, Sam, I think you'll agree with me that the majority of the people are putrefying in their pews. And it's what Christ describes in Matthew 5:13, as salt that's lost its savor, good for nothing but to be trampled under the foot of man. And that's where the majority of Christianity finds themselves today.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, what got me started down this road myself, and I won't, there are a lot of our audience already knows, but we may have some new people listening, you know, with you being on here tonight, we let everybody know you was going to be here. But just to make a long story short, what really got me going down this road, because, you know, I knew something was wrong with today's church. You know, there was a time in my life when I attended a big mega church. In fact, I don't know if you know about Jack Hiles up in
there. Sure.
And I attended there for a while, and that church at the time boasted a gross figure about 50,000 people.
Wow.
In that church on a Sunday, which I don't know how you can effectively run a church that big. I really don't. I mean, I'm not trying to put anybody down. I'm trying to be on the nice side here. But when it takes 6 months to counsel with the pastor when you have an issue, that didn't set well with me. And so, you know, I've been kind of, there's always been something missing. I knew certainly, you know, that I needed, you know, I needed to dig further in what was going on, but there was something missing for me. And so, you know, thank God it didn't take a traumatic experience like you went through. But anyway, that's where Charlie and I met, and Charlie got me introduced to you. And lo and behold, we were going down the same road as far as the end time stuff, trying to deal with that issue, both of us at the same time. He was, you know, he's been preaching, you know, against the modern day end times doctrine that's going around, and I've started doing it too once I started really seeing what was going on. But then we started picking your sermons up, and at the same time all that was going on, you were talking about Romans 13, which is something else that needed to be dealt with. Definitely, because I've heard a lot of modern interpretations of that, which absolutely, I don't know how you can interpret it to obey secular government. When secular government goes against the laws of God, but that's the way a lot of churches teach it, being 501c3. But one of the things that I found quite interesting in your sermon this morning that we heard, you were talking about dominion, and that is the Christians having dominion. And you might, maybe we ought to take some time and explain for those who may not understand what the meaning of Christians taking dominion. What is dominion for a Christian?
Okay. I'd love to deal with that. It's all entwined with who our God is as sovereign, and thus his laws as supreme, which tragically most of Christianity has rejected. They would claim not to have rejected God as sovereign. They would claim that. But in rejecting his law as supreme, or as the standard for all facets of society, they in fact reject him as sovereign. So, and therefore reject his dominion over his own universe. And in as a consequence, they also have rejected dominionizing on their king's behalf. And part of the problem, as you just mentioned, is Romans 13, the usual interpretation of Romans 13, which is the usual interpretation of obeying all civil, secular government authority is completely foreign to the entire first seven verses of Romans 13. There is absolutely nothing in Romans 13, 1 through 7, that depicts a secular civil government. Everything in that document, everything in those verses depicted by the Apostle Paul describes a biblical civil body politic. And the one word in verse 6 alone, the word continually in the King James, devoted, I think, in the New American Standard, mm-hmm. alone, and that verse amplifies what we find in verses 3 and 4, and that is authorities who are continually or devoted to blessing the righteous and terrorizing the wicked or punishing them alone absolutely dictates that it's a biblical civil government. Therefore, the series that you're currently playing on the radio has become a book entitled The Romans 13 Template for Biblical Dominion. And then 10 reasons, subtitled 10 reasons why Romans 13 is not about civil government. So modern Christianity, again, not Christendom, as in Christians dominionizing society, modern Christianity has rejected the template or the commission that Paul provides right there in Romans chapter 13. And in fact, it's also found in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 through 6, 2 Corinthians 10, 3 through 4, 1 Timothy 1, 8 through 11, and other New Testament passages as well. So, dominion belongs to our God, and therefore it belongs to his people. He doesn't intend us to be the trampled. Again, Matthew 5:13, salt that's lost its savor, good for nothing but to be trampled under the foot of man. That's not God's intention for his people, his ambassadors, his servants, his sons and daughters. He intends for us to be, if you will, quote unquote, the tramplers. Now, that doesn't mean that God intends us just to go roughshod through society and do whatever we want on our terms, but using that word trampled, because that's the word he uses in that passage, we're talking about being dominionizers, taking dominion of this society on his behalf and for his kingdom's sake. We're to be seeking his kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. And the key to that is as it is in heaven. Most people miss that. As it is in heaven. Well, how is it in heaven? Well, there's not a place in heaven where he's not sovereign and his law is not supreme, or he doesn't need a law, but where his morality, as reflected in his law for us, isn't supreme. That's what he intends here. We're to seek his kingdom here on earth as it is right now in heaven. That means we must be dominionizers on his behalf. And because Christendom has become merely four-walled Christianity, we're the trampled, and America is finding herself right now precipitously teetering on the precipice of moral depravity and destruction. So we're to be dominionizers, there's no question. And let me say this too, Sam, and that is that there are no vacuums when it comes to dominion. Somebody's always in control of dominion, and if not us, then the Antichrist and the non-Christians, as it is today, thanks to modern Christianity rejecting. I mean, they not only have rejected it, it's like the worst for a Christian to want to dominionize on behalf of his king is almost the worst thing in the majority of Christianity's eyes that he could do. And so, where are we at? America's been dominionized by somebody else who filled the void. And so you're either dominionizing on behalf of your king, or you're dominionizing on behalf of man's kingdom, even if it's by default. If you're not actively in your own life, in your family's life, in your church life, and society, if you have the opportunity to do so, dominionizing on behalf of your king, by default, you're doing it on behalf of man and his kingdom, or we might say on behalf of we the people, if we want to bring in the Constitution at some point into this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we will as we move further down the pipeline here. But one of the things that, that I think, because the church has distorted what it truly means to worship the king in this case, a lot of people probably don't know what a kingdom under the kingship of Jesus would actually look like. And right away you get people who and I've run into this, when you talk to people, sometimes they think it would be this tyrannical system. And I'm thinking, well, first of all, what do we have now? We have a tyrannical system now. I mean, it's becoming more tyrannical by the day. But I have said, based on what I have studied even myself, that Christianity, if taught right, that you'll never find more liberty. Now, there's a big difference between liberty and freedom, but liberty than you will in a Christ-centered kingdom. Now, liberty is not just to be able to do any old thing you want to do. That's just freedom. I mean, I have the freedom to rob my neighbor if I want to, but I also will suffer the consequences. But liberty is doing those things, raising your family in a good moral manner, a system governed in a situation like that would do good up on those people who are doing good on the face of the earth, as opposed to what we have now, which is where we seem to reward evil at the expense of good. Wouldn't you say that's correct?
Oh, amen and amen to everything you just said. The ironic part is that modern contemporary Christianity has been convinced by their pastors, for the most part, not everyone, of course, but for the most part, that God's law is burdensome. Despite what John tells us in 1 John 5:3, where it says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous," in the King James, "burdensome" in the New American Standard. Again, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome." If they're not burdensome, then they're providing liberty. Liberty is found within the confines of his law. And I often point out to people, had Moses come down Mount Sinai with today's constitutional republic's laws, he wouldn't have come down with two tablets. He'd have come down with a hernia, a busted back, and an untold number of wagons, pun intended, pulled by both donkeys and elephants alike. You want to talk about burdensome, and they want, and that's what they're doing. Again, there's no vacuums when it comes to dominion. So, if you think God's law is burdensome, if you think that His moral law, which consists of the Ten Commandments and their respective statutes that explain them and the judgments that enforce them, that's it. If you think that's burdensome, then by default, you're promoting the Constitution or Republic's laws. I mean, we're talking about millions of laws that there couldn't be enough wagons to pull them down off Mount Sinai. And so liberty, there is no liberty. Liberty was lost in America. Let me put it this way. Liberty was officially lost in America in 1787 when the Constitutional framers replaced, and here's how James identifies it, God's law of liberty, when they replaced God's law of liberty for their own constitution. And I've got a better way of putting that, but it's not coming to me right now. But that's when it was lost, when they actually made liberty a goal. It's one of the greatest propaganda tools that man has ever used, is this word liberty. They used it as a goal and almost as a god, made it a god. And in fact, there's a book by Christopher R. called Liberty, the God That Failed. And I would actually carry that book on our book list if it wasn't for his aggressive Catholicism in the book. But it's a good book, nonetheless, if people are prepared to put up with that. But they've made liberty a god instead of a corollary of implementing God's perfect law of liberty. That's where liberty is at. It's not what, and it's usually the pastors that are doing what you depicted, that are trying to make God's laws burdensome. God, and to be under dominion of God's laws. Oh my goodness, why would we want that? Well, guess what you get instead? You get man's, we the people's laws, and they are never, never ending. And they have never provided liberty or the prosperity. In fact, America's greatness comes from the former greatness. We hardly have any greatness anymore. America's former greatness is the result of what took place in the early 1600s under the early colonial governments of the Puritans, who expressly established their constitutions and their government upon God's law. Deuteronomy 28, 1 through 14 says that God blesses those nations who look to Him as sovereign and His laws thus as supreme. And He blesses them with what's depicted there in those first 14 verses. America, I don't think anybody would, but at least very few would disagree that America is now cursed. Why? Well, because of Deuteronomy 28, 15 through 68, because we replaced God as sovereign, placed Him with we the people, and His law as sovereign with the United States' biblically seditious constitution.
Well, I would certainly agree with you that the Ten Commandments would be a whole lot simpler to follow than would be the myriad of laws that, I mean, you can't even count them. I mean, we got entire libraries in Washington, D.C. full of stuff, as well as in the state houses. You can't keep up with it all. And, of course, they try to tell you that ignorance is no excuse. Well, there's nobody... I defy anybody, even those people who claim that they do as attorneys and everything else, I defy anybody to tell me that they know every law, whether it's the, you know, tax code or whatever we have in this country, and that alone is one whole big Pandora's box right off the bat.
Right.
But one of the things that I know some of the people who are constitutionalists would say in response to your comment, and I know where you're going and I understand where you're going, but I'm just going to echo what these people would say so you can bounce off of that. And that is, they would say, yeah, but all those millions of laws are unconstitutional.
Okay. Good retort by those who want to follow the Constitution. Well, my response to that is, well, how did those laws become a part of America's or the Constitutional Republic's law system? And they would also frame it, Sam, in that they would say, yeah, but those that's the fault of the of today's judges or today's legislators. And my retort to that would be, well, how did they become leaders in the first place to be able to legislate the laws that they have and get them on the books? Could it have something to do with Article 6 Christian test ban, by which mandatory, and this is where it's really important, by which mandatory biblical qualifications for civil leaders was eliminated?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they say it's the fault of the judges today. Well, but how did we get those judges? Well, the constitutional framers banned Christian test. And they'll respond to that and say, no, it doesn't say Christian test, it says religious test. Well, is Christianity a religious religion? Well, then, of course, they banned Christianity. And they say, you know, it includes a whole lot of others. Well, let's think about it in its historical context. The only Christian test at the time that Article 6 was framed in the Christian test ban were the Christian test of the 13 original states constitutions. That was the context. They were banned. They at that point, the constitutional framers were thinking about the Christian test of the original 13 states constitutions. Nevertheless, the most hotly debated component of the Constitution in the states ratifying conventions was that component, the ban of religious tests.
Yeah.
Because they knew, and I document this in my chapter on in Bible Law versus United States Constitution, the Christian perspective, I document this with quotations from the states ratifying conventions, fully documented with the primary source information behind it. The most hotly debated component in the in those ratifying conventions was Article 6 Christian test ban, because those men knew that if Christian tests were banned, it would allow Muslims like Keith Ellison and Jews and Hindus and other non-Christians and even Antichrist to be able to become full-blown citizens and even civil leaders, by which they would able to be able to introduce their laws, their morality, excuse me, immorality, into America's cultural society. And so why do we have these laws? Because we have these men. When you eliminate the Christian test and thereby mandatory biblical qualifications for civil leaders, mandatory by God himself, as in Exodus 18:21 and several other passages, you end up with nothing but nincompoops, scoundrels, reprobates, incompetents, and immoral reprobates. And I would ask your audience, does that sound familiar? Because that's where we're at today. Thanks to that, just that one thing, that one component.
Yeah.
Eliminating Christian tests and mandatory biblical qualifications.
Wow. Yeah, and that's very interesting points. That to be quite frank with you, that I mean, I've thought of some of them, but not all of them. But you're right. I mean, the fact that there's no litmus test, you know, and one of the things I've I want to spend some time in this just to get people to think here for a minute, and that is the fact that I think one of the things that we need to spend some time looking at is what a biblical kind of government would look like. What would it look like to have a biblical government as opposed to what we have now? You know, because one of the things that you hear is, now never mind that that in the Muslim countries they keep women in their place in the Muslim countries, but in a godly nation, women would actually have more freedom than they have in the Muslim countries. But to hear a lot of people tell it in our system today, you know, that's the first thing they'll use is that, well, you know that it would be repression of women and all this kind of stuff would be the stuff that they would throw out. And I would argue that no, actually, that's not the case. That that one of the things that you have to do is take Scripture in its entire context when it comes to, for example, how God instructs husbands to love to love their wives and to be the leaders of the household, for example. It doesn't mean that the husband rules with an iron club. I mean, it basically right. means that he's to lead his household. And but there's another part of it, too. I mean, we're also instructed that husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. So, you know, so we can dispel that right off the bat with Scripture as well.
Okay, well, your question, going back to your question, what would it look like?
Yes.
And it's actually interesting that you would ask that question, because I've written a book entitled A Biblical Constitution, A Scriptural Replacement for Secular Government, which is basically taking the preamble and the first three articles of the Constitution and rewriting them biblically, as they should have been initially, and as in a fashion as they did, not using exactly that format, of course, but as they did in early 1600 America, in some of the governments there. But before I talk about this book, just briefly here,
yeah,
let me also lay a foundation, because if we don't have this foundation, then we're not going to go any further with this.
Right. No, I got you.
And the foundation being that God's law is what God says it is. Now, we're not talking about the Mosaic Covenant. The Mosaic Covenant of Galatians 3, Paul describes it as the added covenant, the added law, which is speaking of the covenant, not of God's moral laws, his commandments, statutes, and judgments, which we know were in existence prior to Mount Sinai. Genesis 26:5, it says that Abraham kept those laws. And there are several other passages before Mount Sinai where we can identify the commandments, statutes, and judgments as being in existence before Mount Sinai. So that's not the added law. The added law is not the moral law of God, the commandments, statutes, and judgments. Do away with them, and you do away with God's morality. Do away with God's morality, and you do away with God.
Right.
So you better be careful that you identify correctly the added law. The added law was the Mosaic Covenant, because they would not freely love God enough and their fellow man enough under the Abrahamic Covenant to keep his laws freely. God says, all right, I'm going to bind you in a covenant that will make you, you'll have to keep, in order to be righteous before me. Deuteronomy, the last two verses of Deuteronomy 6, which is exactly what Christ said he did away with. For Christ, or Paul wrote, said that Paul, that Christ is the end of the law for righteousness. He's talking about the Mosaic Covenant, the added covenant.
Right.
So I'm not talking about the added covenant here. I'm talking about God's law, his commandments, statutes, and judgment. And unless we have this foundation first and foremost, and most of Christianity is what's today known as antinomian. Nomia is the Greek word translated law in the New Testament. They're anti-law, quote-unalleged Christians. That's another. I won't go down that road. But they're antinomian. They don't have the foundation of God's moral law underneath them. They've done away with it. They've abolished it, not understanding what the added law is. So we've got to have this foundation first, in order to create what God intends for us. We've got to have a foundation of God's law and what he says it is. So let me begin. Let me read to you how David described God's law in Psalms 19:7 through 11. And here's what he said, and I'm going to reinsert God's name back into the text here where he inspired it, and regrettably the English translators took it out and replaced it with Lord or God, all in capital letters. So I'm going to read it with Yahweh as God intended, where it says, the law of Yahweh is perfect. let me stop there for just a minute, because today's antinomian Christians, anti-law Christians, are wanting to do away then with what is perfect. I don't think that's God's intentions at all. Anyway, continuing, the law of Yahweh is perfect, converting the soul. That's a whole another topic. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of Yahweh are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandments of Yahweh, or no, it says the commandment. The commandment of Yahweh is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Yahweh is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of Yahweh are true and righteous altogether, speaking of the civil judgments that enforce the commandments and his statutes. And then in verses 10 and 11 it says, more to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey in the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. Now that's a foundation that we need to have before we can talk about establishing biblical dominion, because if you don't believe that God's law is all of that and much more, Paul, for example, describes it as good, holy, and just, and a number of other things, and spiritual as well, not meaning out there where we can't touch it, but that if you want to be spiritual, you better be involved with God's law, Romans chapter 7, verses 12 through 14. Without that foundation, you know, if you're talking to antinomians, then they aren't going to be at all concerned about establishing biblical dominion.
Right.
We've got to reach them first with God's law, with his morality as reflected in his law for society. And what Christian, if they just stop and think about it, wouldn't want the Ten Commandments as the foundation of our society? They complain all the time about what's happening to us. You know, under the governments we have today, under the secular governments, well, they've thrown out the Ten Commandments and their statutes that explain them and the judgments that enforce them. God's triune moral law, it's triune and integral. It takes all three aspects of his law to make it work, for it to be a functioning law. You must have statutes that explain the commandments, and you must have the judgments that enforce them. And if we can, and that's our first responsibility when it comes to dominion. We've got to teach people, we've got to help them to love the law like both David and the Apostle Paul did under the New Covenant. They've been taught so often, they've had preachers that have cherry-picked the New Testament. There are 29 that I've come up with, New Testament passages that have been cherry-picked to make and look like God's law is burdensome, abusive, and grievous when he's only talking about the Mosaic Covenant. And there's 37 New Testament laws that are completely ignored that declare that God's law is still for us today. We've got to reach people with that message first, and then we can move on to dominion. And if we've got them there, for people who want to know what God's dominion or government would look like, I have provided a book called The Biblical Constitution, A Scriptural Replacement for Secular Government.
Now, how can people get those books, Ted, if they'd like to get your works and read them?
Okay. First of all of my books, except for only maybe two or three, can be found online at our website, BibleVersus, V-E-R-S-U-S, Constitution.org, on our online book page. I'm not interested in building an empire. I'm interested in furthering and advancing God's kingdom. And so if you can't afford the book, maybe you don't even want the books, but you can download even this book that I'm talking about, A Biblical Constitution, the entire 575-page Bible Law Versus the United States Constitution, A Christian Perspective, is there as well. I've written, I think, over 25 books and booklets. They're almost all there, available online. They can download them, print them right off their own printers, and don't have to pay a thing for them. Or we have the books themselves that are available if they choose those. And if they can't afford those, I'll send those free as well. So there's a store page, but if all you have to do is tell me I can't afford it, but I'd love to have this book. If you'll use it or use it for somebody else, I don't care if you pay for it. I'll send it to you. God will provide one way or the other to take care of the expenses, and always has.
Right, and these are all in PDF format, right?
They're all in PDF format on the website, again, on our online book page. And let me mention this, too. This may be where some people want to start with as far as the Constitution and whether it's biblically compatible or not. It's not. It's, in fact, biblically seditious. There's hardly an article or amendment that's not antithetical, if not seditious, to God's sovereignty and his morality therein. And if they will go to our website, again, BibleVersusConstitution.org, go to the right-hand column, and the second entry is the U.S. Constitution a Christian document survey. If they'll click on there, there's 10 questions that they answer, and then the where they can provide then their information afterwards. And if they'll do that, they will automatically receive a complimentary copy of the 85-page primer of the 575-page Constitution versus, Bible versus United States Constitution book. You know, 575 pages for a lot of people is a little bit daunting, so I decided we got to get this smaller, so we took the most important issues in that book and made an 85-page primer, and they can get that free. Of course, they can get any of this free, but they can get that free by taking our Constitution survey in the right-hand column on the, on our website. I think that's found on every page, regardless whether they're at that. So if they'll go there and take that and provide me an address, I'll get one in the mail to them as quick as I can, which is usually the next day.
Right, and I know a lot of our blind listeners will particularly look at the digital versions because the PDFs, a lot of us can read. So, and that's been always one of our problems, has always been trying to get things in. You know, fortunately enough, we do have the Bible, at least the King James, in a readable format, and some of the other ones, I think, New American Standard and that kind of thing. But
right, and let me therefore mention also that most of my books come from audio series that I have preached in the past. For example, Bible Law versus United States Constitution, The Christian Perspective, comes from a 30-part audio series that, in fact, we may be playing on your radio station next. But it comes from that. It's expanded to some degree. You know, as I wrote the book, I came to new information that wasn't in the audio series. But for the most part, they can find that book in our audio series. So if they'll go to our audio messages page, they can find. In fact, there's over 1,100 messages online there, or thereabouts.
There, yeah. So the people can download audio sermons. Your audio sermons are there. Are you and you're constantly? Are you still producing audio sermons even as we speak? Are you producing new copy as we speak?
Yeah, I'm currently in part. I think my next message will be part 23 of an expository series on Hosea. So there's all kinds of different messages, a lot of expository messages on different books of the Bible, like Hosea, like I'm doing now presently on Hosea. But there's also series on the law, series on the Constitution, you know, just a whole spectrum of different messages available in audio form.
Well, it works out really well. See, Charlie's taking care of getting your stuff posted. I don't even, other than making a slot available, I don't even fool with it. So that's why I'm asking you questions, because he's just kind of taking care of that for us, and God bless him for it. I mean,
I was just going to say, God bless you both for it.
I'll tell you, because I've gotten my hands full since my wife Trish had a stroke back in March. See, she used to do part of the operations here, and I used to do the other part. And, well, when she had her stroke, I took on the rest of it. Because her computer skills suffered as a result of it. And so when Charlie came along and we started talking and he offered to take this on, I taught him how to do it. It was a quick study, just told him, here's what you need to do, bam, 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 and we had it going, and the rest is history. So
I'm not surprised. Charlie's awfully good with that stuff.
He is, and he's taking care of all that. So that's why I ask you that question, because he gets the files, uploads them into the system, and then I listen just like everybody else when they play on the air. If people don't think that I don't get something out of the station, hey, just because I run it doesn't mean I don't listen to things, too. So,
well, once again, for your blind listeners, you know, I'm not blind. I've only got one eye. I got shot with an arrow back when I was a teenager, but in one eye. But so I don't know how this works for you guys, but if they have even a difficulty maneuvering through the website. All they have to do, if they can do an email to me, and I'll provide my email address here just in a minute.
Sure.
They only need to ask me, and I can send them then links to whatever they're wanting or looking for, audio form or otherwise. And so anyone who would like to, they can email me at tweiland. Weiland is spelled T as in Ted, of course. And then my last name, Weiland, which is W-E-I-L-A-N-D. And it's at vistabeam.com. Vista as in Victor, I-S-T-A, beam, that's B as in boy, EAM.com. And I'll be glad to help them through, you know, finding their way around if they need that.
Gotcha. Now, do you have your email address on the website or your,
I don't have the email address, but there is a link for contact that'll take them there.
Okay. If all else fails and you missed that, we'll give it again for the show is over, and I can also connect you too if need be, if you want to contact me on the contact form over at MO Liberty Radio. And once again, thank you, Charlie, for doing that. So we have a contact form over there where you can reach me, and I will send you information. The contact info is email address. So there we go.
Yeah, Charlie, if they go through Charlie's the one that runs my website, so he knows it better than I do, in fact. So they can always...
You can contact him, too.
They can contact him, too.
Yep, absolutely. So we've covered the bases real, real good with that. So anyway, getting back to our original discussion, but I didn't want to let that go by without people knowing how they can get your books and information. And so glad we could do that. But anyway, getting back to the issue at hand of biblical government versus the government we have today. I think when you left off, you were talking about that one of the things that you did is you outlined what the Constitution should be versus what it is now. I think is where we left off. Is that where we left off? I think.
I think so. Yeah. At least that was inserted here and there.
Yeah. So I don't know where you want to take off from here, but.
First of all, and people often ask me, well, how did you get into writing about the Constitution? And it really comes from my own coming to understand what I just read from Psalms 19 and other places that provide similar information on God's law. I came originally from an antinomian camp, those who teach against God's laws having any validity under the new covenant. And once I understood how ridiculous that really is, and that the scriptures, Old and New Testament alike, absolutely denounce that idea, it wasn't much of a step, although it did take some time for me to get from teaching on God's law to realize, now wait a minute, what about this in the Constitution? You know, what about the Christian test ban that eliminates mandatory biblical qualifications for civil leaders? That's not biblical. What about Amendment 1, which, by the way, Sam, and you probably know this, is probably the amendment or article that Christians hang their hat on probably more than any other article or amendment in the entire thing. And it's probably one of the most ungodly articles and amendments. In fact, that and Article 6 are probably the two worst in the entire... I better add the preamble into that, too. But Amendment 1 is probably the worst. And they laud it as, you go on the Internet, you go on these blogs. I just responded to one here recently that was talking about how in one of his recent talks, President Trump lauded freedom of religion. And you hear preachers do this all the time without thinking about what they're even promoting. What's freedom of religion? What has Amendment 1's freedom of religion gotten America? And let me put it this way. Nearly every Christian, I can't imagine that, you know, when we're talking conservative Christianity, there isn't a Christian in this country who's not concerned about the Muslim invasion here in America.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask a question. Is America's landscape dotted with mosques, and we could add synagogues and temples of other gods, Hindu temples or whatever, is America's landscapes dotted with mosques and synagogues and temples devoted to other gods through which our posterity are being evangelized to their false gods? Are they here dotted across America because of the First Commandment or because of the First Amendment? Well, of course it's the First Amendment. You go back to the early 1600s that were expressly established upon God's law as their constitution. That was their constitution. There were no mosques. There was no Sharia law. There was no Islamic terrorism, the worst of which is the proselytization of our children to their false gods. There was none of that in early 1600 America, whose laws were God's laws, beginning with the First Commandment and its statutes and judgment. And so what is freedom of religion? Well, freedom of religion, at least as provided through the First Amendment, is an unequivocal violation of the First Commandment. And Christians today are promoting, essentially the proselytization of their own posterity to these false gods and to whatever terror comes from the mosque or temples or whatever in the process. Now, I forget how I got there, Sam, so maybe you can help me remember.
But. No, it's fine, but you got on the First Amendment, and that is an interesting point. I mean, you know, because now it's down to the point where I hear so many people in patriot circles who talk about worshiping God, whoever you deem God is. And, you know, I hear that kind of comment, you know, those kind of comments all the time. And so, in other words, I guess basically, according to so many people in our world today, you can just make one up and worship it. Apparently, Ted.
Yeah, and that's where our posterity is at, particularly. You know, there's several generations now that's passed since, you know, over 230 years since the ratification of the United States Constitution and Amendment 1 that provides for all these mosques and synagogues to be built here in this land. Now, it doesn't mean that people here shouldn't have the freedom of conscience to be able to worship who they want, but to openly proselytize something other than our God, gods other than Yahweh and laws other than His, that's unequivocally a violation of the First Commandment and its statutes. And no wonder our posterity are now, well, any God will do, because we've allowed them to bring that to us. By this quote-unquote biblical Christian document that so many people have been bamboozled into believing is just that, when it's the exact opposite. You know, I think here's the problem, Sam. I think our people, and I'm talking about Christians, that as Christians we have so desperately wanted those guys, the framers and 18th century founders, to be our guys, and that document to be our document, that Christians have just, we want it to be that way, that we have failed to actually examine the document by the only standard by which everything should be ethically evaluated, and that's God's morality is found in His commandments, statutes, and judgments. We've just failed to do it. But when you do it, and I guarantee anybody who will do as I have done, who knows the Scriptures well enough to do it, will actually go and examine the document, word by word, phrase by phrase, article by article, amendment by amendment, they'll find that there is hardly an article or amendment, including Amendment 1, including Article 6, including the preamble, and almost all the rest of them, that's not antithetical to God's morality and seditious to His sovereignty. And that's what the book Bible Law versus the United States Constitution, the Christian Perspective, is all about. I've devoted a chapter to examining every article and every amendment by God's Word and His law. And again, for those who want audio, that's where it began with the 30-part audio series as well.
Right.
So they can find that as well. So those, you know, those are just some of the examples. People ask me, well, what do you have for examples? Well, those are pretty serious ones. Let me share with you just a real simple one. A simple example. Biblically, I would ask people, when are men to be inducted into the militia? 21, 18, or 20? And I do use militia because that's what the Bible promotes. It doesn't promote a standing army.
Right.
So is it 21, 18, or 20? Well, if you know the Bible, you know, according to Numbers 31 through 3, it's 20. So, did the framers and following legislatures enact law in this instance in accordance with or in contrary to Yahweh's law? Well, it's clear. They first started with 21, turned it into 18. They had two shots at getting something as innocuous as that right, and they still didn't get it right. But let's consider, you know, again, one of the more egregious examples. You know, biblically, are there, how many legislators are there? More than one or only one? Well, according to Isaiah 33:22 and James 4:12, there's only one lawgiver. Therefore, only his law is law. And yet the constitutional framers made no mention of the one. You know, the Constitution is except for perhaps the timekeeper in Article 7. It's a godless, Christless, and biblically lawless document. You can't find God in it. You can't find Christ in it. They've made no mention of the one lawgiver whatsoever. And instead, usurped his law authority, his authority as the one and only lawgiver. He's the only one that can determine what's good and what's evil. Therefore, he's the only lawgiver. They usurped his law authority and turned it over to a bunch of legislators, unbiblically elected, into unbiblical positions of civil leadership, in which there's no requirement for them to be biblically qualified.
Yeah, and I would argue a lot of them with worse criminal records than the average person roaming around society today.
Absolutely. And what's come of those kind of legislators? How about Roe versus Wade? So you promote the document that allowed for unbiblical legislators to be voted into, legislators that usurped his one and only legislative authority. You promote the document that allows them into authority, then you're also complicit in whatever they do, including Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, and I would argue that Roe versus Wade, that whole abortion issue, is one of many reasons that this country is in the sewer that it's in, because when you kill the most defenseless out of all of us, those who haven't even been born into the world, I mean, they are, you know, they haven't even been born in the world to either sin or whatever. You know, they're the most defenseless of us, and you kill them. You know, it's no wonder that God would take a dim view of not only America but any nation that would do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, set aside the fact that there is. There's hardly an article or amendment in the Constitution that's not antithetical or seditious to God and His Word and His law. Set that aside. Every problem America faces today can be traced back to the fact that the framers failed to expressly establish a government upon Yahweh's immutable morality as codified in His commandments, statutes, and judgments. I don't call it abortion, I call it infanticide, because if you look up abortion and miscarriage, they're one and the same in the English dictionaries.
Yeah.
It's in utero infanticide. That's the term that I'm trying to train people to use here. So, but would in utero infanticide and sodomy be tolerated, let alone financed by the government, if Yahweh's perfect law and altogether righteous judgments were the law of the land? Now, setting aside that the fact that there all these things that are antithetical therein, just the fact that they didn't expressly establish society upon God's law has allowed infanticide and sodomy and every other abomination under the sun to be usually not only legislated but financed by America's government today. It's what we're experiencing today, Sam, is what Hosea described as the whirlwind effect in Hosea chapter 8, verses 1 and 7, where he says, because they rejected God's law, they sowed the wind, and then in verse 7, and he says, then they will reap the whirlwind. We're reaping the whirlwind of the wind sown by the constitutional framers when they rejected Yahweh as sovereign and his law as supreme. And, you know, why do we have these legislators we have today? Well, it's part of the whirlwind. You rejected God's law, you rejected his biblical qualifications for civil leaders. Here's what you get. You get what we got today. Why is Roe versus, you know, had they established God's law as supreme in 1787 instead of a bunch of Enlightenment and Masonic theistic rationalist traditions as law, had they established God's law as supreme, as the law of the land, including Exodus 20:13 and Exodus 22, 23, and 24. Infanticide, we'd never heard of Roe versus Wade. Planned Parenthood wouldn't exist, and millions of infants would have lived to see the light of day. Had they just put the law into effect, let alone having done everything else wrong within the Constitution itself. And the same goes for even financially, what the economic problems we face in America. There would be no Federal Reserve had they established the law according to God's laws on economics and taxes. There'd be no Federal Reserve or its mistress, the fiat usurious money system, banking system we have today. And thus America would be much, much more prosperous than what we have today. You can go right down the line and say, okay, if they'd put God's law into effect, this wouldn't be the case. Crime wouldn't be as rampant if, for example, cruel and unusual punishment, Amendment 8, I think, where it rules out cruel and unusual punishments, which they would identify some of God's punishments, judgments as, had that not been ruled, we wouldn't have near the crime that's rampant today. God's laws are not just meant to be judgmental upon the criminal. It's meant to be a deterrent to have criminals amongst us at all. It's a very deterrent system to keep crime from becoming rampant. It's rampant today because they outlawed God's law.
Oh, yeah.
God's judgment.
One case in point right off the bat. I mean, look what happens today if you spank your child. I mean, the Bible has a lot to say. I know. The Bible has a lot to say about disciplining your children, and yet you can't spank your child. And we wonder why we see children every day. And I've complained about this a lot, about children that act up. And I can remember when I was a child, Ted, when we'd go out somewhere, my parents informed me how I was going to behave when we would go out in public. And Trish, my wife Trish, said the same thing. She said, we'd be in the car, and she said, we'd be going somewhere, and I was told how I was going to act before I got there. And it's just a totally different world today, and it's a world that I can't stand. I can't even hardly stand to be out in public sometimes with the way kids behave today.
Well, let me comment on that and put a little positive spin on it. Right now, I believe, Sam, that we're at the most important paradigm. Let me start again. I believe we're at the very, very, very beginning of what's probably the most important paradigm shift in American history that we've yet to see. Even more important than when the Puritans came over and established biblical governments, because right now we are starting to see the tear down of this national idol known as the United States Constitution. And that must be torn down first in the hearts of Christians, of all things, and patriots, and finally torn down completely. But we are in the process of seeing that beginning. People are starting to turn and to see what has been done to us, not only by the constitutional framers in the late 18th century other founding fathers, but by their pastors and other quote-unquote conservative radio show hosts and so forth. And so that it's incremental so far, but we're starting to wake people up. The very fact that I believe my book, Bible Law versus Constitution, was written in 2012. Yes, 2012. The very fact that it took that many years for God to choose a dumb cowboy to do what I did in this book. I don't know of any other book that's done what I've done. And not that that means anything about me, but the very fact that it took to 2012 for somebody to do that. And I will add that there are at least three or four other books that came out all within a two-year period attacking the problem from different angles. At the same time, the fact that that all occurred now, basically, is indicative that God is beginning to make progress in ways that we're going to appreciate, that there's a paradigm shift. This idol, like with Gideon's father's idol, before he could be used by God, God demanded he take down his father's idol. This idol, I don't care about the Constitution other than it provides the opportunity to teach God's law and how much superior it is.
Right.
But it must be torn down. It's our American forefathers' idol. Our national idol that must be torn down in order for us to finally, and probably we're talking a generational vision here, unless by judgment God speeds up today, but that for our posterity to have a chance sometime in the future to do it right or righteous the next time around, to do it like our 1600, early 1600 Puritan forefathers, founding fathers did.
Right, and this is why it pays to go back and look at as much of that as you can, because I guarantee you these people that are pushing global government have their own constitution waiting in the wings too, and you can't very well combat all of that if you don't know anything about our real history in the first place as it originally was.
And I know you'd agree with me that judgment, we're under judgment already and have been for some time. In fact, we've been under judgment since 1787 nationally. God's grace, we were only incrementally being cursed, but that's increased over, and especially in the last 20 years, it's compounded in ways that I know for me, and I'm sure for you, that you never thought you'd see in your lifetime. And except God's judgment speeds up an awakening of Christians, you know, I'm afraid we're not prepared, and I know we're not prepared now to be able to replace that coming down. And I know it's going to take judgment. I don't want to see it for myself or my posterity, but I know it's going to take judgment to finally bring America back to her knees and back to her God. And I think such a judgment that will probably reduce America's population by 2/3 or more. And that's just my guess, my estimation of the situation. God certainly may have other plans. But I'm afraid that things right now are probably only going to get worse, except for the remnant that we're beginning to reach. And that remnant's got to be involved in dominionizing, particularly their children and their grandchildren, to prepare them to be those who can, you know, finally. And in fact, that's why I wrote the book, A Biblical Constitution, A Scriptural Replacement for Secular Government. It was with this generational vision in mind, believing it's probably not going to occur in my generation. I'm preaching today to my generation for the sake of the next two or three generations. But I wrote that so that they at least have something to go by, and it needs to be improved, and they will when that time comes, but to have something as somewhat of a foundation to say, oh, here's what we need to do. Here's the beginning of a biblical constitution that we can fill this void with. And it may not be the next void. It may be a vacuum that's maybe two and three generations down the road. And the next one, if it's filled, if it isn't filled biblically, we're talking about only digressing, devolving into something much worse than we see today. And it's happening even without a global Constitution, it's happening before our very eyes, almost on a daily basis now, where you can see things devolve more and more. Transgenderism, who'd ever thought that would have begun?
Oh, I know, yeah.
You know, golly. And but God's allowing our enemies to destroy themselves so that we can prepare for at least a future generation to do it righteous.
Yeah, and I guess if there's only one thing I can say is a silver lining out of all of this, this is some of this stuff is kind of what has really brought me around. Because, you know, this show normally, Ted, is a current event show. I go through the news, I cover, I give my analysis on the news, and I'm not anybody special, but I've been around this long enough that I can put two and two together and pretty much predict a lot of where things are going to go. You don't always get it right, but, you know, after a while you learn from the globalist playbook. But one of the things that started happening to me was I started going further and further into this broadcast, particularly within the past maybe year or two, more and more, not being able to make much sense out of it without getting into the spiritual realm. Because there was a time where I was afraid to touch anything dealing with the spiritual realm on this show, because usually what winds up happening is, you know, that everybody, you know, you've heard that old mantra, well, the worst thing you can do is discuss religion and politics because it'll breed arguments every time. And, well, you know, my attitude is if we can't discuss anything, if we can't face ourselves and understand why we are where we are, then we're lost. We're done. We may as well hang it up, stick a fork in us, we're done. Okay?
That's right.
And I just couldn't do it no more. And so, and what's so interesting about it is that's why I have to wonder, if this wasn't definitely God's doing the way it worked, because right about the time I was going through all of this, and actually I think the first part that really broke this door wide open was when I started hearing all these false prophets and all this kind of stuff talking about, you know, everybody kept making a prediction, oh, the world's going to end on this date. Well, we know that nobody knows except for Yahweh himself, so we can't, you know, so we know that's false going right in the door. But what I'm basically saying is that Charlie was the one that contacted me during this time over unrelated issue, you know, the situation that he has had going on and we've covered on this show here in the past several years. And he contacted me, and then once we connected, then the rest is history. And I started realizing that, you know, it's a good thing I didn't go down this road up to this point, because there was a time where I just bought into the average run-of-the-mill churchianity like everybody else, you know?
Well, I think, you know, there are a few that, of course, haven't gone that route, but thank God for his grace and mercy and loving kindness that allows us to be stupid.
Yeah.
And to bring us out of that stupidity. And the fact is, we still are. Sam, you and I are still stupid. We're still First Corinthians 1 Christians. He's taken the foolish and the weak and somehow chosen to use us. But we're all, you know, I tell people, listen, we're all false teachers, you know. There was only one who walked the face of the earth who had perfect doctrine, and the rest of us are just trying to catch up to him. Now, there's two types of false teachers. There's those who are intentionally so, and then there's the rest of us who are doing our best to study, to show ourselves approved unto God, and to change when we find that we've been wrong. I tell people that, you know, you need to be both hard-headed and open-minded. Hard-headed enough that you're not following every wind of doctrine. You know, founded in God's Word, hard-headed enough that you're not following every wind of doctrine, but soft-hearted and open-minded enough to make the changes when all of a sudden you realize you've been wrong. And it's such a wonderful path to take. I mean, who wants to be stuck in a rut, which is nothing but a grave with two ends kicked out?
Yeah.
And that's where the majority of today's churches, you know, there's most conservative churches will tell you, study to show yourselves approved and be a Berean. But, you know, you can be a Berean in those churches as long as you're just bouncing off the walls that they've created. You go beyond their walls, and all of a sudden you'll find yourself on the outside looking in. Oh, praise God. And I went through that. Praise God. He allowed me to to go beyond their walls and to get booted, so that I could even learn more. You know, our responsibility, we have responsibilities to each other as Christians, but our principal responsibility is to God and to become like Him, which can only happen through His Word, and that we are willing enough to admit wrong, to repent of our failures, and proceed in the direction He's taken us. So, you know, I think there's a whole lot of people that relate to what you just said that are going through that as well. You know, that's why the majority of the people I minister to have left the mainline churches, because they found out, hey, these guys, what little truth they have, even a lot of the pablum of the Word isn't even being taught correctly, let alone the meat of the Word. And we've got a lot of people desiring meat, praise God, that are seeking and searching for truth. And I hope some of those listening today that have made an idol out of the Constitution will be open-minded enough to take a look at this and see that this document is anything but what they have been taught that it is. You know, idolatry is not so much about statues as it is statutes, such as what one considers the supreme law of the land. Article Chapter 6 declares the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, not God's law. That should be an eye-opener for a lot of people. Because if you are looking to the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, you're an idolater. Because idolatry is about statutes. It's whose statutes are you looking to as supreme. And when you look to God's law as supreme, you all of a sudden realize this document is anything but biblically compatible. It is I'm going to go out on a limb here, at least not out on a limb for me, but for a lot of people. It is the worst thing that has ever happened to America. The absolute worst thing. It is the reason America finds herself on the precipice of moral depravity today, because they did not establish God's law as the law of the land, and even instituted things that are absolutely anti-biblical and anti-God.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, because I never even thought of that myself. You know, it's so many times you go over and you read things and you look at things and you don't even, and there's things you miss, and you can go back sometimes two and three times and still miss them. And you know, like I say, you bring it up. I mean,